Welcome to Shanahan on Literacy, the site where we believe there is nothing more noble than to teach somebody to read. I'm Tim Shanahan, your host, and today's podcast is about eating elephants and teaching syllabication. This is a blast from the past. This entry first appeared on March 13th, 2021, and was republished on February 22nd, 2025. The reason for reissuing this now is because of recent exchanges I've observed on some of the discussion boards that I monitor. As far as I can tell, there's not much in the way of new research evidence on the teaching of syllabication, meaning that I've not changed my conclusions expressed in this blog. Nevertheless, I suspect that the newly energized interest in the role that morphology plays in different aspects of reading development may increase interest in making certain that students recognize syllables. What originally elicited this blog was a question that a teacher raised for me. She said, "What are your thoughts on teaching syllable division patterns? I recently came across some new research from Devin Kearns, and it made me start thinking about if all the time programs spend teaching syllable division patterns is really justified. If teaching syllable division is not time well invested, what type of instruction would you recommend replacing it with?" Well, my response starts out with a personal experience. I was training for a 500-mile bike trip. Three of the day's rides were going to be sentries. That is, you ride 100 miles or more on such days. Practicing for those efforts, training for them, was making my back ache and my knees hurt. But I got to tell you, I felt no closer to being able to accomplish those kinds of distances. They frankly seemed impossible. I was so discouraged that I really wanted to drop out. And there's no shame in knowing your limitations. But I didn't quit. I pedaled all 500 miles and was even charging at the end. What turned things around for me? Well, I had an epiphany. It dawned on me that I could never pedal 100 miles and that no one else could either. That realization made all the difference. You see, though I couldn't ride a century, I could easily ride 10 miles. So to reach my goal, I just had to ride 10 miles 10 times each day. If you look at the productivity literature, how to solve complex problems or to take on overwhelming challenges, the idea of decomposition comes up a lot. The experts say if you want to do something hard, break the problem into smaller parts. That fundamentally is the idea of syllabication and decoding. When you confront multi-syllable words, it may help to break them into smaller parts. It's kind of like that old joke, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. That may seem sensible, but where do you bite? That's the problem when it comes to dividing English words. It isn't always clear how to divide things. And what do you do with the vowels once you have bite-sized chunks? Syllables matter in English. The consistency of spelling patterns and their relationship to phonemes and pronunciations is determined in part by where particular letters appear in syllables rather than where they appear in words. And the perception of vowel sounds, the central element of the syllable, is key to successful early phonemic awareness development. If you doubt this, think of a word like tiger. If you break the word in two before the letter G, then you're most likely to come up with the proper pronunciation, tiger. If you divide that word after the G, you end up with tigger, which may make Winnie the Pooh happy, but doesn't get you to the right word. Of course, you could teach kids to divide all such words before the consonant, but then you end up reading camel as camel, where you break such words into syllables, determines whether the word follows the most widely used pronunciation patterns or is an exception. Linnea Airey has described the perception of the syllable as paving the way for entry into benefiting from phonics instruction. That's a quote. The way for entry into benefiting from phonics instruction. The syllable has been found to be an essential unit in phonological processing. In other words, syllables are basic. Now, I too read the Kern study that letter referred to, that question referred to. You seem to think it says something about whether to teach syllables. I don't see it that way. A close reading suggests Kearns doesn't either, and his other work confirms that. Now remember, Kearns only examined a single category of syllabication patterns, a group governing the pronunciation of single vowels. He found a high degree of reliability in vowel, consonant, consonant, vowel words, VCCV words, such as rabbit, and a reasonable degree of consistency in those VCV words that I was talking about, though that division rule didn't do so well with longer words than two-syllable words. He also reported that there were spellings within that universe with highly reliable pronunciations, such as ick, like at the word of magic, and wa, W-A, like in water. That still leaves us with all the other kinds of syllables, such as S-I-O-N, T-I-O-N, B-L-E, or a raft of common morphological units that operate consistently as syllables in our language, like un, pre, trans, pro, ing, that I-N-G, ed. Kearns didn't examine any of those. Kearns seems to be just reminding us that simplistic approaches to decoding instruction that encourage students to expect a simple and consistent set of pronunciation rules would be a poor reflection of the English spelling system. Students need to develop a mental set for diversity or variability when it comes to word recognition. Teaching syllabication as a rigid set of rules, as some programs do, makes no sense, since our orthography doesn't work like that. Telling students that VCV patterns are to be divided after the first vowel may benefit the reading of words like label or tiger, but it plays hob with words such as statue and camel. We may remember that the sounding out of words is only intended to provide readers with approximate rather than exact pronunciations. It may be possible to determine that the word is statue if you start with statue, but it would be definitely more easy if stat was the starting point. The solution to that problem isn't banning syllabication teaching, but to make it more conditional. Investigations like the Kern study can be useful for informing those kinds of curriculum choices. In any event, it is wise to tell budding readers that when beavering away at an unword with that VCV pattern, that they should try splitting the word both before and after the consonant, trying out at least a couple of the high probability pronunciation probabilities. There are more choices than the two I've given, with schwa being a frequent culprit. Rosemary Weber provides an interesting analysis of the role of the schwa in word perception. As I've written many times before, we can't determine what works in teaching through descriptive studies of the brain or language. Such studies may help explain why some instructional approaches work or provide valuable insights about new pedagogical possibilities. I honestly think that's what Devin Kern's study that you're quoting does. But they can't reveal what works. Those kinds of studies can't do that. That's why any real science of reading instruction ultimately has to be about what improves kids' reading ability. Now, there aren't a huge number of instructional studies to go on, and some of those that have been done found that syllable teaching didn't help. However, an insightful analysis sorts this out nicely. Those regimes that taught rigid spelling rules for syllabication didn't manage to improve reading, while those that aimed at fostering conditionality and flexibility in the use of syllables to decode words, those did significantly better. Since that analysis, instructional studies have consistently had positive results when it came to teaching. Your letter makes it sound as if teachers spend a lot of time teaching syllabication. I doubt that and hope it isn't the case. In studies that found syllabication instruction to improve word recognition and reading comprehension, students received only 2 to 9 hours of such teaching. Even 2 hours of syllable training was reported to be beneficial. Given that, I'd teach syllabication. It has value. The amount of such teaching should be pretty severely limited. Decoding instruction is not primarily or mainly about teaching students how to sound out words. Such teaching, if successful, must instigate readers to perceive patterns and conditionalities within words. That's what orthographic mapping and statistical learning are all about. Teach syllabication, but expose kids to the exceptions and teach them to consider alternative possibilities and to use these divisions conditionally and flexibly, both when they read and when they spell. Approach words both through decoding and spelling. See Richard Gentry's fine books on this. Focus considerable attention on the morphological units within words, too. And for this, I turn to the books like Words Their Way and to the WordWorks site on the internet that Peter Bowers Literacy Center has. If you want kids to become good readers and good spellers, a bit of teaching of syllabication done in the right way can really be quite useful. Please pass the elephant. And with that, that'll be my final word on syllabication today. If you'd like to get a written copy of this presentation, go to the Shanahan on Literacy website on eating elephants and teaching syllabication. Will appear there on February 22nd, 2025, and should be easy to find. The benefit of getting the written version is you'll be able to examine the 11 research citations that this blog includes, as well as a link to the 22 earlier comments that came up in response to this. A lot of times you can learn a lot from what the teachers and professors and so on write in response to what I have to say. And with that, I'm going to thank Greg Johnson, our sound engineer, and thank you for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you up the road a piece.